Thanks for listening to Chicago's Morning Answer podcast, sponsored by Signature Bank. Signature Bank takes pride in helping customers grow their business and provide unmatched banking expertise, custom financial solutions, and the industry's best technology. So whether you're a business looking for a deposit relationship or needs a ready source of financing, Signature Bank is the right bank for you. Call today at 773-467-5600 to hear how Signature Bank can help your business grow and thrive. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender. Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. We have the Pritzker Purge Law, you know, the Safety Act.
The which is a joke.
Basis for, the moniker comes from the Purge films. Life is imitating art in all sorts of dystopian ways, the city of Pittsburgh, Steel City, may have done us one better.
Oh, no. What do they have?
The Pittsburgh Police Department will not be having any officers man any police stations from 3 a.m. to 7 a.m. every morning.
Oh, boy.
Crime
put on hold from 3 to 7. Okay.
Well, no, go to sleep early so you can get up at 3 to 7 and enjoy whatever mayhem you'd like to inflict on the city and its residents.
What was the big takeaway today?
Yeah, Susan, residents of the city will see a major change in the way police respond. They will no longer respond to calls that aren't considered in-progress emergency. That means calls like criminal mischief, theft, harassment, and most burglary alarms will all be handled by an enhanced telephone reporting unit. That means residents will file a police report over the phone. Officers will not respond unless it's an emergency. Also, between the hours of 3 a.m. and 7 a.m., there will be no officers at any of the six stations throughout the city. Call boxes that link directly to 911 have been installed for people to use in case of an emergency. And during the overnight shift, there will be as few as 20 officers to cover the entire city.
What?
The chief said today the data supports that.
Yes, it's enough to cover the entire city in those hours when we have 8% of the time people are calling. I'm confident in the decisions that we make that it impacts this bureau and the city in a much better way than we have in the past.
Now, the chief also acknowledging today that some of these changes are due to staffing shortages. He's down to 740 officers, well below the 850 they would like to have.
These are a man of science and data. Where have we heard that before? The data supports having 20 police officers. First of all, announcing that we're going to have 20 officers on duty in a city of 300,000 people for 4 hours every day. 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line. 646-36-DA, turnkey.pro text line.
But they're shutting down, too, between 3 and 7? Do you know how many crimes are committed here in Chicago and in other big cities between those hours? I mean, why are they paying their taxes then?
Just leave a message, and when we get in at 8 o'clock, we'll respond as quickly as we can.
I mean, I'm laughing so I don't cry. That is, I don't think I'd live in that city if that's literally no one has your back.
Well, I mean, in the city of Chicago, it's the same problem, although we haven't announced a four-hour purge period, but
yes,
it's the same issue, isn't it? We have half of the 911 calls go unanswered. So you're still dealing, these police departments are trying to put good face on it. You heard that affiliate reporter there in Pittsburgh basically, and he did say there are 150 cops down of where they need to be. Still dealing with the ravages of the summer of 2020.
Yep.
The turning over the cities to Black Lives Matter Marxists and their criminal buddies, and pushing the defund police, otherwise hamstring police in myriad ways.
Well, their police have been
defunded.
Was
initiated in all these big cities in 2020. You're still dealing with that. The terrible public policy. And it's interesting because you've seen some reversals recently in states you wouldn't expect it by ballot initiative in San Francisco, California, in Washington State. But this is what big cities demanded just 4 years ago. And, you know, when you make that move, it's hard to claw it back because what's the problem? There are many problems, but one of them is you have a lot of people that don't want to be police, that retire early.
Exactly.
And also don't want to sign on the one end and don't sign up for the academy on the other end.
Well, why would they? I mean, if they make one wrong move, they could lose everything. They could lose their pension. They could lose their home. They could go to jail. They can go to prison. Not to mention what would happen to their family, too, if they, you know, got wrongly accused of being racist or saying something wrong during an arrest, accidentally firing their weapon. My God, hopefully that wouldn't happen, but it's a possibility. So why do they want to take the risk?
There's something else to that, too. I think for the most part, the people get into law enforcement because they want to be a protector. Mm-hmm. They want to do good. They want to help people. That's a lot of the satisfaction you get from the job, I suspect, is helping people, protecting them from being victimized, helping them if they did get victimized by catching the criminal and seeing the criminal go to jail and seeing the system work. I suspect that's true. Police can call me and tell me if I'm wrong on that. And yet one of the things that's, I think, underappreciated, I mean, in addition to just this sort of insanity, I mean, giving over police precincts during the summer of 2020 has happened in Seattle and Minneapolis, and giving over the streets generally. And then you're going to tell police, oh, yeah, nobody's going to 20 cops for the 300,000 people in Pittsburgh for 4 hours. And you announce that. I wouldn't want to be one of those 20 cops. But the other thing, too, is stories that we hear all the time, reported all the time in Chicago, but out of Boston, it doesn't matter. It's the same policymakers with different names in the same in different cities pursuing the same policies. Worcester, Mass. One suspect is behind bars, but a second man wanted in connection with the double murder remains at large days after a beloved mother and daughter were found shot to death in a bullet-riddled SUV. The person on the lam that they are searching for has a pre-existing warrant, wanted on charge of armed assault with intent to murder and possession of a firearm without a license. 27-year-old Chastity Nunez, her 11-year-old daughter, shot and killed last week in broad daylight. And the repeat offenders that repeatedly victimize people, and the cops know who many of them are because they're repeat offenders. And they see them turn right back on the streets to commit the crime again. So what do you say? What am I doing here? Right. What are we doing here? I don't want to be a part of this.
That's the biggest complaint I hear from my cop friends. Like one even said she kind of sits in her car, Dan, and just she admitted. She goes, why I'd arrest him. I'll see him tomorrow. Doing the same thing with the same group of thugs. Walking around with those stupid masks and their hoodies on, breaking into cars, same thing. Taking catalytic converters or whatever they want to take.
In Oakland, just to give you a sense, Chicago residents, that you're not alone. We had the clip of the one woman being essentially a citizen reporter and just scanning the malls in and around Oakland and ticking off all of the brand name retailers that are no longer there, including Walmart. And her comment was, how bad does it have to be when Walmart doesn't want to stay? Taco Bell is closing all dining in at the stores in Oakland indefinitely. 100% cashless and drive through only. Taco Bell is going to look like you're pulling up to Fort Knox and you're talking to the clown's mouth and, we'll send a Brinks truck out to drop off your chalupa. I mean, so this is the retail response. So that sort of indicates what's going on in the larger city. Bill and Glen Ellen, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Yeah, I'm kind of thinking outside of the box here for Pittsburgh. Why don't they simply pass a law that it's against the law to commit crimes between those hours? Problem solved.
Exactly. Yeah, right, exactly. Thanks for the call.
Got a lot
right.
of text messages. Dan and Amy, from 3 to 7 a.m. is a good time for neighborhood watch groups to assemble. Well, it shouldn't be. No. about it's vigilantes or, you know.
It's a good time for you, a la the Purge movies. It's a good time for you to, you know, drop the steel coverings over your windows, put a pot of coffee on, set up your home as a barracks, essentially, and, you know, be ready to go when the silly kids come knocking.
Business owners, now's the time for your business to make the move to a locally owned business bank. Hi, Mike Gallagher here to let you know that you don't have to look far. Signature Bank was founded in Chicago with a simple mission to help companies like yours grow, succeed, and thrive. Their decisions are made locally by a terrific team that knows your name, cares about your business, and invests in your success. That's why Signature Bank is my bank. I'm a customer. As business owners, they knew that local family-owned businesses were not getting the help they needed or deserved. So I invite you to reach out to my friends at Signature Bank today. Write the number down. Remember this phone number, Signature Bank, 773-467-5630, and learn all about this great bank, 773-467-5630, or visit them online at signaturebank.bank. That's signaturebank.bank. Signature Bank makes commercial banking personal. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. So on Sunday, South Carolina Rep. Nancy Mace was on with Clinton Foundation Donor Zero on This Week, talking about Georgie Stephanopoulos, the Democrat operative that we're supposed to believe is some sort of objective journalist scrivener of the passing scene. Right, right. Well, Clinton Foundation Donor Zero went right at Nancy Mace, who has publicly spoken about being a rape victim. And this was their exchange about her rape and how that informs her politics.
Donald Trump for president. Judges and two separate juries have found him liable for rape and for defaming the victim of that rape. How do you square your endorsement of Donald Trump with the testimony we just saw?
Well, I will tell you, I was raped at the age of 16. And any rape victim will tell you, I've lived for 30 years with an incredible amount of shame over being raped. I didn't come forward because of that judgment and shame that I felt. And it's a shame that you will never feel, George. And I'm not going to sit here on your show and be asked a question meant to shame me about another potential rape victim. I'm not gonna do that.
It's actually not about shaming you. It's a question about Donald
Trump. No, you are shaming me.
You've endorsed Donald Trump for president.
Right.
Donald Trump has been found liable for rape by a jury. Donald Trump has been found liable for defaming the victim of that rape by a jury. It's been affirmed by a judge.
It was not a criminal court case, number one. Number two, I live with shame. And you're asking me a question about my political choices, trying to shame me as a rape victim, and I find it disgusting. And quite frankly, E. Jean Carroll's comments when she did get the judgment, joking about what she was going to buy, it makes it harder for women to come forward when they make a mockery out of rape, when they joke about it.
Doesn't it make it harder for women to come forward when they
It makes it harder when other women
candidates.
Joke about it, and she's joked about it. I find it offensive. And I also find it offensive that you're trying to shame me with this question.
I'm not trying to shame you.
You are.
Well, in fact,
I have dealt with this for 30 years. You know how hard it was to tell my story 5 years ago when they were doing a fetal heartbeat bill and there were no exceptions for rape, incest, rape or incest in there? I had to tell my story because no other woman was coming forward.
I'm just asking.
No rape victims were represented. And you're trying to shame me this morning.
I'm just asking.
And I find it offensive. And this is why women won't come forward.
Women won't come forward because they're defamed by those who perpetrate rape.
They are judged and they're shamed. And you're trying to shame me this morning.
I
think it's disgusting.
I'm not shaming you at all.
I told my story. It took me 25 years to tell my story. I was judged for it. I still get judged for it today.
312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line, 646-36DA, turnkey.pro text line. Boy, Stephanopoulos was really dogged. A more judicious commentator might have pulled off of that question a little bit earlier. But he really wanted an answer, really wanted to drive the point home to Nancy Mace, rape victim.
I mean, what happened to civility? And I couldn't believe, is he going to keep going on like this? And yeah, he kept going on like this. And she should have said to him, oh, excuse me, didn't you work for Bill Clinton, who's a whore who violated and, you know, sexually abused an intern in the White House? George, what about your judgment call? You want to talk about rapists? We can talk about rapists. Tell me about Bill Clinton.
If you don't vote for Joe Biden, then you're not a rape victim.
I mean, this E. Jean Carroll is the craziest woman I've ever seen in my life. Rape victims, real rape victims, Dan, don't joke around about being raped. And that's what she did. She was on there. She was flirting with Anderson Cooper. She's like, well, it wasn't really rape. He didn't throw me down. And she didn't even know, because during her trial, which, by the way, they changed the statute of limitations so that she could file a civil suit against Trump. That people seem to forget that. She couldn't remember where it happened. She was wearing a dress that wasn't even made in that time. She's crazier. She's absolutely out of her mind.
Well, a couple of points of order. One, he was found liable of sexual abuse, right, which does not necessarily implicate rape. It could be unwanted touching. So that's not necessarily rape. That's just a point of order. But I know George Stephanopoulos likes to say rape over and over again. Secondly, not just the fact that it wasn't a criminal trial, which Mace referenced, but what the standard of evidence is. It's a preponderance of the evidence. It doesn't require a unanimous jury verdict. And it's in Manhattan, where you have the entire legal system wired to imprison and bankrupt President Trump. And so you'll forgive me, you'll pardon me, if I'm not particularly persuaded by E. Jean Carroll's decades-old story, the holes in that story, as you were just referencing, the venue for this trial decades later, and the judgment of a majority of jurors from a jury pool that is about, you know, 80% hatred of Trump. I mean, the context of the whole thing matters, too, in terms of the substance of the accusations against Trump. Now, with respect to pushing this on Nancy Mace and saying essentially that what I sort of joked, I mean, you're not authentically a rape victim, or you're some sort of rape victim hypocrite if you endorse Trump for president. Well, Harris Faulkner and Molly Hemingway had a go at this yesterday on Faulkner's show, you know, in the afternoon on Fox. Yeah.
The women who work there with George Stephanopoulos, what kind of conversations are going on? Because, look, throughout my decades of experience, when things happen, we discuss it. And sometimes it's hard, but you have to talk about those things in the workplace.
I think it's an excellent point. It's not just George Stephanopoulos who messed up here. It's the entire production team at ABC News. Yep. It's fine that he's a former Democrat operative who now presents himself as a journalist. But he was actually wrong on this fact. He said 10 times something that is false. He said that Trump was held liable for rape. That's just not true. And he was wrong 10 times. That's not just a him problem. That's an everybody problem. At the very least, there needs to be much more than apologies here. There should be discipline, and there should probably even be firing. The real story when it comes to the lawfare against Donald Trump is how the Democrat Party has made it a campaign to create lawsuits up and down the Eastern Seaboard to go after their primary political opponent in an attempt to bankrupt and imprison him. That is Stalinist behavior. A real journalist would actually ask tough questions about that fascistic behavior, and instead of applauding it like George Stephanopoulos does or lying about it, there need to be repercussions here.
Repercussions. What should those repercussions be? You want an apology from George Stephanopoulos or ABC News?
I want him fired. They're not going to do that because he's a hack. And damn him. I mean, I have friends who were raped, and he just insulted every rape victim in America with that line of questioning. He did. And that judgment, the $91 million, and the reason why this happened, because Trump had to pay the $91 million in order to appeal his case. That's why they brought it up. That's a joke. My friend that was raped, she didn't get a dime. And this chick who's bat blank crazy, $91 million? And they're just doing it to stick it to Trump. It's all political.
So the the issue of the apology. Why do conservatives seek apologies from people that they otherwise properly characterize as a partisan, rabid, left-wing hacks who despise the principles on which this country was founded and the ethos of general decency? What good is an apology from George Stephanopoulos or the president of ABC News? Or what good is it if some staffer gets fired or even Stephanopoulos gets fired? What does that accomplish? Here's something. Rather than, you know, playing the victim here, I'm not talking about Nancy Mace. I'm talking about, you know, Republicans that are outraged about this exchange. And I agree. I mean, I agree that Stephanopoulos was painfully out of line. And
does he have a daughter? Does he have a wife? Yes.
You know, that's an exchange that will haunt him.
Yep, for the rest of his life.
I want an apology from George. Well, what's that worth? You don't believe anything that George Stephanopoulos says with good reason. So you want an apology from that person? So what? Here's an idea. You know, so rather than ABC News apologize to us like it's a legitimate news organization, why don't you stop treating it like a legitimate news organization? And why don't you, Mike Johnson and Nancy Mace, get the House Republicans together and say, we're not going on ABC News anymore? Why not use this as an opportunity to jujitsu? So, you know, stop, because all this takes is a little restraint. It just takes some members of Congress, including Nancy Mace, who likes to be on TV, to exercise some restraint and say, I'm not going to pursue my star turn by being on cable news all the time and then maybe getting a slot on Bill Maher's stupid show on one Saturday evening. And, you know, I'm not going to do that because, you know, what we know is that the left, because they are in charge of all of our cultural institutions and because they dominate the media landscape, they can ignore conservatives. They can ignore us. They use the Nancy Maces of the world and the people that go on these programs as totems, as mascots. Mm-hmm. Look how even-handed we are. Look, we get viewpoints from across the spectrum. No, you don't. It's a show.
Right.
So why are you playing that role for them? Just say, we're not going on. We as a party, none of our people are going on ABC News. We will not participate in any debates where ABC News is a sponsor. We categorically reject ABC News as a sponsoring organization for anything the Republican Party participates in until further notice. Why not jujitsu and ignore them for a change? You know, do something that's empowering rather than pleading for an apology or, you know, going back on these same programs to wring your hands and express your moral indignation. And all you're doing is furthering the story and their bottom line.
Right.
People watch. What is she going to say? Nancy Mace. They won't get me on that show again for a long time. Ever.
No, just saying it right. Put your foot down. I don't think she expected that line of questioning, though.
I'm sure she didn't. Who would expect?
That to a rape victim. Shame on him.
Who goes after a rape victim to say, aren't you a hypocrite?
Like she had some choice in the matter. That's what it made it sound like. She could choose. She had no choice. She got raped when she was 16 years old.
No. That's not the point. The point is the choice of who you support for president, but the issue is connecting those dots and suggesting that one precludes another.
About Tara Reid? Didn't Joe Biden allegedly rape her?
Allegedly, but we don't have any investigations, so we don't have any prosecutions. They've got a civil trial, so that's what they use.
That's why they overturned that law.
They're better at lawfare than we are.
Yeah.
As they're better at so many things.
We're sleeping, they're plotting in ways to get us.
Well, they have institutional power, and this is my point. They have institutional power, and we don't, and we just complain about it, like saying, give me some of your power. And they say no. Well, why would you ever expect power to be voluntarily given from your adversary to you? So take it. Joe in Naperville.
Yeah, I don't see why Trump can't sue Stephanopoulos and ABC for libel, because he clearly, there's no evidence that he raped her. There's no trial that he raped her. It was held liable for rape. But Stephanopoulos said rape 10 times. That's clearly a libel case, in my opinion.
Yeah.
Yeah, but he's kind of busy in the legal department right now.
Tough call. I mean, it's, you know, technically, but a tough call. I don't know. Yeah. I mean, to my point about lawfare, which essentially you're suggesting. Yeah. I mean, I get it. I just wish there'd be a better understanding of this dynamic. So you don't fall in the trap of please give us a meaningless apology. Please patronize us with an apology. Ralph and Rantoul.
Yeah. Good morning, Dan and Amy. Yeah, I know you're hitting all over this, and I agree. This isn't about Nancy Mace at all, as we all know. It's about Democrat power and George Stephanopoulos and his little perverted, demented dwarf mind coming from the Clinton factory, the Clinton garbage factory, and saying, how can we both artificially inflate a completely corrupt civil trial results against Trump, and also just really make the point that clearly if a Trump supporter comes on, we are going to bash you, and we're going to take this opportunity to just make it about more Democrat lies, because it's all they do. And, you know, Stephanopoulos may have some sort of creative license that he enjoys putting together these interviews, but this goes all the way to the top of ABC News and ABC Network. If he wasn't fully supported by those stooges, he'd be out of a job right now. He'd be canceled by the network. That would have never occurred. And his pounding of actually saying, hey, Nancy Mace, you're a corrupt piece of trash like all Trump supporters. So I'm going to lie about the verdict and use this opportunity to inform stupid people what actually didn't occur, and make this a shame moment for you as a Republican. So I can use this against you to say you're a loser. And here's the point that I'm going to use. It's just convenient for him that she was the victim of a horrible crime when she was a teenager. He's disgusting. I would have enjoyed seeing her take off the microphone and say, Stephanopoulos, you and you Democrat creeps, this is what you're all about.
Absolutely.
See you later.
Absolutely. That would have been the time
been
to do
great.
It, too. Absolutely. Well, here's the thing. Yeah, Ralph is getting to an important point here. One, it's a preview of what they'll do if Trump is convicted of, anything in that hush money trial or anything else. This is a preview of it. They have this civil verdict as
backup,
as questionable, to be polite, as it is. And they're using it. And they're using it to say, Nancy Mace, you're an apologist and a supporter of a rapist. Oh, and by the way, so is every other Trump voter.
Yeah.
Why are you supporting a rapist? Mm-hmm. You're supporting a rapist. You're supporting a convicted rapist or a rapist found liable. But they won't say that. They'll keep it simple. Convicted rape, like accuracy matters. You're supporting a convicted rapist. Why do you support convicted rapists? That's the party of convicted rapists. Just like you're an insurrectionist if you voted for Trump. And if Trump is convicted of the hush money trial, you're supporting a convicted felon who paid off a porn star or whatever, or you're just supporting convicted felon, and they'll say that so 1 million times on every communication channel in the world every week for the next 6 months if that would happen. This is why you need to get ahead of these things and message them and understand where they're going to take this and head them off at the pass.
And I got to tell you, E. Jean Carroll, who has a dog name, it's a word for breast, but it starts with T because you can't say that word, and a cat named Vagina. She wants to go and campaign with Biden. Wouldn't that be spectacular?
Hans Christian Andersen's great fairy tale, The Emperor Has No Clothes, that is written about Donald Trump. It's just, we're the ones who clothe him in all this power. Mm. He has none himself. It's his followers. It's his hangers-on. In the court, they were strutting back and forth and handing him messages. It was, right, Robbie?
Ms. Yeah. Carroll. Ms. Carroll, you say he's nothing. You say the emperor has no clothes. The emperor is trying to run for president again.
And right now is leading.
And right now, the polls suggest it's a coin flip. It's very close. Have you heard from Joe Biden's campaign arm about potentially campaigning against the former president, Donald Trump?
No.
Are you interested in doing so?
Do anything I can.
Oh, yeah, please. Please get yourself out there.
It's not about E. Jean Carroll. If you make it about E. Jean Carroll, you're completely missing the political point.
I'm just saying that's the crazy sideshow where, please campaign for Biden.
It's obvious what she is. It's obvious what she is. And it's also obvious what they're doing. And I would focus on what they're doing.
Business owners, now's the time for your business to make the move to a locally owned business bank. Hi, Mike Gallagher here to let you know that you don't have to look far. Signature Bank was founded in Chicago with a simple mission to help companies like yours grow, succeed, and thrive. Their decisions are made locally by a terrific team that knows your name, cares about your business, and invests in your success. That's why Signature Bank is my bank. I'm a customer. As business owners, they knew that local family-owned businesses were not getting the help they needed or deserved. So I invite you to reach out to my friends at Signature Bank today. Write the number down. Remember this phone number, Signature Bank, 773-467-5630. And learn all about this great bank, 773-467-5630. Or visit them online at signaturebank.bank. That's signaturebank.bank. Signature Bank makes commercial banking personal. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. FBI Director Christopher Wray appeared before Senate committee yesterday to talk about the border and the exchange he had with Senator Marco Rubio was particularly telling, relevant. Two topics covered here. Migrants committing crimes in this country and among the crimes, these criminal rings selling fake IDs and papers. And then the international piece when it comes to criminal syndicates, like human traffickers with ties to known terrorist organizations. Let's hear from Christopher Wray. You know, it's just as a quick aside, I just interviewed our friend Kevin Brock, the former assistant director of counterintel for the FBI. I spent 24 years there. For my counterculture podcast, so you can check that out at amgreatness.com, okay. American Greatness.
It's up there now.
Yep. And remember the last time we had him on, we talked a bit about this too, that he and a bunch of other FBI veterans got together and penned this letter saying, where's the FBI in this policy discussion about what is happening at the border and what needs to happen at the border in order to enhance the safety for Americans, or enhance our national security.
Yeah, we had Jody Weiss on too. He's one of those people who signed the letter and explained that, you know, Amy, he's like, it's not if, it's when there's going to be a terrorist attack because of our porous borders.
Oh, well, here's the first piece of it. The the criminals that we've imported, we invited here because that's what this administration did. They didn't invade, and we tried to stop them. They were invited to come, and they did.
Certainly, we have had dangerous individuals enter the United States of a variety of sorts.
Are we seeing crimes from people that entered the country over the last 3 years, some of them with ties to gangs or other criminal organizations?
Well, I guess what I would say is this. From an FBI perspective, we are seeing a wide array of very dangerous threats that emanate from the border, and that includes everything from the drug trafficking. The FBI alone seized enough fentanyl in the last 2 years to kill 270 million people. That's just on the fentanyl side. An awful lot of the violent crime in the United States is at the hands of gangs who are themselves involved in the distribution of that fentanyl.
But you're also seeing and tracking local law enforcement arresting and for example, the assault on the police officers in New York. All the reporting said they had ties to this gang in particular. But there's no doubt that people that were criminals in their country of origin have crossed that border and are now in the U.S. committing crimes.
Correct.
So that's a problem, would you say?
A little bit. 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line. 64636, type in DA, then a quick comment.
I'm glad we've now established what everybody knows if you've just paid passing attention to the stories that are populating news feeds across the country. Yeah, yeah. So, okay, now that we've established that, would you like to do something about it? I mean, do I need to prompt you? And so the FBI is going to do what? Ray also going a little deeper, talking about the criminal rings, trafficking in fake papers, and more disturbingly, the human trafficking and the ties that bind human traffickers and terrorist organizations.
Certainly there is on the dark net, for example, there is a significant marketplace for different kinds of stolen identity.
What about in the street?
I think as well. Yeah.
Okay. And there are smuggling networks all over the world that specialize in moving people from all over the world, including from the Middle East, Central Asia, and so forth. Are we aware of any of these smuggling organizations are run by or are conducted by people that have ties, for example, to ISIS or other terrorist organizations?
So I want to be a little bit careful how far I can go in open session, but there, there is a particular network where some of the overseas facilitators of the smuggling network have ISIS ties that we're very concerned about, and that we've been spending an enormous amount of effort with our partners investigating. Exactly what that network is up to is something that's, again, the subject of our current investigation.
But so there is a network we're concerned about that has facilitators involved in it that have ties to ISIS and
Correct.
Other terrorist organizations.
Correct.
We'd love to tell you, but it's an ongoing operation, so I can't tell you anything. I don't know. It's nice to confirm. It's nice the FBI director confirms what is obvious and well documented. I didn't hear a lot about what they're doing about it or going to do about it, except we're working diligently with our partners. You know, we're the unnamed we, the generic we're doing stuff and we're on the job. Well, I'm sorry. You no longer enjoy the benefit of the doubt. So I'm going to need a little bit more about what you're doing or not doing. We're investigating ISIS related facilitators in the human smuggling business, find out what they're up to. I think you just told us what they're up to.
Right.
Now, what are you going to do about it? I mean, it's just like, I don't know. I mean, all of this just leaves me more exacerbated than if he would neither confirm nor deny human smugglers exist or fentanyl exists or we've got a problem at the border. I mean, what's the difference functionally? Substantively. And then we're left to just tell stories of the wreckage while we get this performance like we got from the Senate and from the senators. I mean, they need to press Ray. Right. Ray should be treated as a hostile witness on every topic.
Okay, he can't be trusted. I mean, he sat on Hunter Biden's laptop since 2019. That's just one of the things that he's done to, you know, make us not trust him or the FBI.
Travis Wolf was hit by a car on December 20th of last year, day before his 12th birthday. The driver was an illegal from Venezuela who drove the wrong way at 70 miles an hour, causing a head-on collision. Travis Wolf, 12 years old, died last week. Missouri kid.
Oh, God.
We're just going to tell stories, and then if you use the wrong word, then we're going to obsess about words, not lives. David Hadrich, 27 years old. Police just arrested an illegal from Mexico. Illegal from Mexico, who's identified as white on the booking sheet,
of course,
was driving on drugs when he plowed through a stop sign, hit David while he was on his motorcycle, and dragged him to his death. 27-year-old in Scottsdale, Arizona. What are we doing about it?
What are we doing? Yeah.
Well, I'll tell you what California is doing about it. Their legislators, almost as criminally insane as ours. AB 2031, a bill introduced by California Assemblyman Reggie Jones Sawyer, seeks to grant illegals convicted of violent crimes with legal assistance, such as helping them avoid deportation. So we're going to have taxpayers pay for legal representation for convicted felons who are in this country illegally, so to aid them and abet them in being able to stay. Well, at least that's what California wants to do.
312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line. You can also reach us on our text line, 64636. Type in DA, then a quick comment. Did you hear Biden yesterday? So this is the day after he apologized to an illegal alien killer for calling him an illegal. And then the White House is like, no, it wasn't an apology, whatever. But this is what he said on the campaign trail yesterday.
Look, what we need just an orderly process at the border, not to keep, they're not vermin, they're not scum, they're not people who are all criminals coming.
Well, it's the same thing he said on MSNBC over the weekend. It's the same thing he always says.
They're not scum, they're not, I mean... What are they doing over there? Who's in charge? What is it? Why did they come out and say it was not an apology? The White House, he's apologizing for an alleged non-apology. What does that even mean?
Here's what he said over the weekend.
During your response to her heckling of you, you used the word illegal when talking about the man who allegedly killed Lake and Riley.
An undocumented person. And I shouldn't have used illegal. It's undocumented. And look... When I spoke about the difference between Trump and me, one of the things I talked about on the border was that the way he talks about vermin, the way he talks about these people polluting the blood. I talked about what I'm not going to do, what I won't do. I'm not going to treat any of these people with disrespect. Look, they built the country. The reason our economy is growing, we have to control the border and more orderly flow. But I don't share his view at all.
So you regret using that word?
Yes.
When you say you regret something, that's basically a apology.
Thank you.
Right. But this is what Olivia Dalton, one of the deputy spokeshumans to KJP, had to say yesterday.
First of all, I want to be really clear about something. The president absolutely did not apologize. There was no apology anywhere in that conversation. He did not apologize. He used a different word. I think what we should be really clear about is the facts. So... In addition to the fact that, the president did not apologize.
I mean, so it should come as no surprise to anyone because, I mean, why not redefine apology? You're redefining everything else.
There you go.
So that's the wrap today. But just to buttress the case I've been making since I've been on the air, because that's how long Biden's been around and in positions of power, amazingly, that he is a company man. You're going to love this flashback.
Okay.
Here's Joe Biden. I mean, you know, the nice thing is he's been in public life for
50 years.
So many years. There's been a lot of iterations of Joe Biden. So the Joe Biden today would be excoriating the Joe Biden of 35 years ago, the same way the Joe Biden of today is excoriating Trump. Why? Because he had a change of heart? No. He's an empty vessel because he's a company man. And wherever the power resides in the party, that's where you'll find Joe Biden. It was in a different place when the DLC was coming to the fore under President Clinton and was organizing for the 92 campaign. Remember? Some of us, I think, are old enough to remember that. Mm-hmm. The move to the middle. Joe Biden, 35 years ago, criticizing George Herbert Walker Bush on being soft on crime and soft on border security.
To put it in very personal terms for a moment, Joe Biden, me, I would settle for a world in which I could worry about the same kinds of things that my parents worried about, in which I only had to worry about the grades my children got in school rather than the drugs they're being exposed to, in which I only had to worry about the prices my wife had to pay at the supermarket instead of fearing that she might get mugged by a junkie in the parking lot as she loads her groceries into the car, in which tonight I could call my mom just to wish her pleasant dreams, not for the purpose of making sure she's safe in her own home. That's the kind of world I want. That's the kind of world you deserve. In a nutshell, the president's plan doesn't include enough police officers to catch the violent thugs, not enough prosecutors to convict them, not enough judges to sentence them, and not enough prison cells to put them away for a long time. We disagree with the president's decision to cut back on our previous commitment to protect against drugs coming across the border, to cut the Customs Service, the Coast Guard, and the Border Patrol. We think we should do more to stem the flow of drugs across our borders, and we think we should go one step further. Let's go after the drug lords where they live, with an international strike force. There must be no safe haven for these narco-terrorists, and they must know it. And we don't have to promise a world without worry or fear. We're not asking for that much. All we have to do, together, is to keep our promises and stay together. Thank you.
More police. He's talking like Ron DeSantis sending kill squads down to Mexico and South America. That's Joe Biden 35 years ago. You know, at the tender age of, you know, 46.
Right.
I mean, these people are professional prevaricators, to be generous.
Well,
they will say and they will do anything to stay, to gain or to stay in power. Anything. You are just a, in Joe Biden's case, checkers piece. That's all you are.
Well, some Democrats were offended by the apology, non-apology. Jessica Tarloff, I know she's a political pundit on the Five. She always supports Biden, not this time.
He didn't say, I'd like to talk to you about all the amazing thing that people who come to this country illegally do. They're, you know, our favorite shopkeepers. They're, you know, the woman down the street who cares for our kids. He's talking about a murderer.
Right.
Totally blew my mind that there was a backtrack. These are the kinds of things that people have historically enjoyed about Joe Biden, that he is relatable and feels normal to them and doesn't speak in that kind of woke speak. And, you know, Senator Alex Padilla from California criticized him, Joaquin Castro, et cetera. I don't believe they were actually offended either, because what do they want to be associated as a member of the Latino community? You want that guy out. Mm-hmm. You want the good ones in. And the murderer's out.
The Five is about a half a dial turn better than The View. Jessica Tarloff is an idiot, and that show is intellectual violence. That is a waste of time. And so is the conversations we're supposed to have about Joe Biden's wordplay. I mean, yeah, it needs to be documented and it needs to be demonstrated. Like, this is what they're focused on. They're not focused on the 27-year-old who got mowed down in Scottsdale, Arizona, or the 12-year-old who was the victim of a wrong-way driver who shouldn't have been in this country in Missouri. I mean, Joe Biden's wordplay as he tries to keep up with the Joneses of the new Marxist Party. Joe Biden's relatable. He's not relatable. It was a scam. Scranton Joe, it's manufactured. Oh, riding the Amtrak and the regular guys, relatable.
He told that story again yesterday.
It was all phony. It's been phony for 50 years. He is a phony. He is a cipher. He's not a human being. Most of them are not. They are cardboard cutout human beings. They are one-dimensional. You give them the inputs and they spit it out in advance of, as I said, staying or climbing. Phil and Darian, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Hey, good morning, guys. So kudos to you guys for finding that tape, 35-year-old tape of Biden. I'm sure there's tons of them out there. But, you know, I've said this before. Why doesn't Trump's team or our side, why don't we bring this up more mainstream? Now, I know we have, you know, no platform for the mainstream. However, we do have, you know, these private organizations, YouTube and whatever. Why don't we bring this up ever? We don't ever bring this stuff up to show the hypocrisy of this man.
Thanks for the call. But the problem is the hypocrisy doesn't matter. Because that's where his supporters are. That's where so many of the American people are. I mean, they're just leaves in the wind, too. And it's very much like we talk about with COVID accountability. Well, to hold the lockdowner Pauls accountable would be to indict myself. Then I'd have to say, well, I was wrong, too. And I mean, God forbid that I hold myself accountable. Why do we have politicians like this? Because we don't hold ourselves accountable for anything. We're innocent bystanders. It wasn't my fault. I did the right thing. Boy, everybody's doing the right thing. And somehow we have this chaos. So that's the problem. And the other thing is there's just a lack of appreciation for what's being run. And all you have to do is go back and look a little bit. Take the time to look and listen a little bit. And that's what this show is for, too. Your crib notes and see what they were doing. This is just the next iteration of it. It's the next step. So back in the DLC days in the early 90s, it was tough on crime. George Herbert Walker Bush, too soft on crime, too soft on border security. And then you start to move. You start to move as you move public opinion over time. So here's Obama in 2009 with Scranton Joe at his side.
This is not going to be a free ride. It's not going to be some instant amnesty. What's going to happen is you are going to pay a significant fine. You are going to learn English.
Wow.
You are going to go to the back of the line so that you don't get ahead of somebody who was in Mexico City applying legally.
Oh, boy.
But after you've done these things over a certain period of time, you can earn your citizenship. So that it's not something that is guaranteed or automatic. You've got to earn it. But over time, you give people an opportunity. Now, it only works, though, if you do all the pieces. I think the American people, they appreciate and believe in immigration. But they can't have a situation where you just have 500,000 people pouring over the border without any kind of mechanism to control it. So we've got to deal with that at the same time as we deal in a humane fashion with folks who have put down roots here, have become our neighbors, have become our friends. They may have children who are U.S. citizens. That's the kind of comprehensive approach that we have to take.
That's what they sold. Can't have 500,000 people just coming over the border willy-nilly. How about 7 million, Mr. President? That's what they sold. But and you say, well, gosh, if only we could go back to those days and where the Democrats were reasonable. And look at Obama's talking about mandatory English and paying a fine and waiting in line. That's a scam. It was a scam then. It's been a scam the entire time, moving public opinion. So you know, we move public opinion from border security and kill squads against narco terrorists in the early 90s to the time that Obama came around and identity politics was ascendant. Path to citizenship. But wait a second. I know. Don't pillory me. Wait a second. Path to citizenship. But we're going to vet it. We're going to have these requirements. They're going to have to get to the back of the line. And then what happened? 10 years of sanctuary city jurisdictions populating. And then it was and you know, comprehensive. And but we won't do anything if we don't get the path for dreamers. We're not going to cooperate with ICE. 4 years ago, it was defund ICE. In advance of Joe Biden's campaign, defund ICE. Every Democrat presidential candidate on that debate stage, sans Michael Bennett, the senator from Colorado, said yes to decriminalizing coming into this country illegally. Wait a second. I thought it was going to be we're back of the line and are they become our neighbors and our friends. And but so that means they're vetted and they're peaceful and they're productive. We'll have this all. They're going to pay a fine. Oh, we got this whole comprehensive approach that we've put together. Bull jive. It was a scam from the world's best cipher for the radical left, Barack Obama. Let's sell them this, get the hands clapping, sound reasonable, middle groundish, and then just move public opinion, all these big cities and blue states and some red ones and some Republicans like Bruce Rauner tolerating, advancing their flag for sanctuary city jurisdictions. And we're ignoring when somebody gets run down, a person in this country gets run down in the streets of Chicago or run down on a interstate in central Illinois, like Jeannie Brady, say their names.
Yeah.
And here we are. Everything that was said for the last 30 years was leading to this moment where it was open the floodgates. And it was a lie from the get-go. Every step was one lie built on another for the purpose of getting to this point. And the next stage, of course, is the full incorporation onto the voting rolls. And then they got the country.
Yep. And we're never going to get it back.
On the voter rolls and the welfare rolls. Not all of them, but enough of them. Enough of them to move states, enough states into, you know, solid or reliably blue. Because it's not just about being here illegally and having cover. It's also about being a state dependent, whether you're a domestic or you're a newcomer, quote unquote. The whole thing. And if you don't look at it through that 3 or 4 decade continuum, then you miss what they're doing and have done. Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. I mean, these schools in Edmond, Oklahoma, it's just...
I don't know if I can stomach any more information about Edmond, Oklahoma right now.
I mean, it is really quite something what's been going on there. And apparently how long it's been going on. So first it was this video that surfaced with high school students licking the toes of other students and maybe some adults. And then we find out they're like licking chocolate and peanut butter off. And this is all to raise money for philanthropic causes, which is what the school used to defend the events that took place in a high school gym at Deer Creek High School.
Sexual in nature. It is appalling.
And then we find, this is the Edmond High School district, and There's more than one school. And apparently this was going on at
all the high schools.
Yeah. So then we get video. Well, it's more than the toe licking.
Stop.
We also feature armpit licking.
Okay.
You can lick chocolate and peanut butter out of the armpits of.
Cream.
Yeah. So, you know, that apparently piques some interest in What exactly is going on? How long has it been going on? And how is it that nobody has called foul until these videos started surfacing? Does no one in this school district, on the school side, the family side, have any gosh darn sense?
And whose parents would sign their kids up for this?
Well,
they'd not even know.
It's really interesting because according to this report that was done by the Fox affiliate down there, this has been going on for a while. And so it's increasingly difficult to believe that at least some parents didn't know.
Once my name was called, I was so nervous, anxiety, like almost in tears, because I did not want to have to do these challenges.
Aside from licking toes, these are some of the other challenges or dares former students described to Fox 25.
Somebody was nominated to stand in a trash can. This was after we had all eaten our lunch.
Oh, no.
And we all would pour our lunch on top of this person that was in the trash can.
The bird feeding would consist of four students, and so the first student would have to, like, drink something, put it in their mouth, and then spit it into the next person's mouth.
Oh my God.
And then spit it into the third person's mouth, and the fourth person had to swallow it.
This is how former students say the dares chosen by student council would be assigned.
Any student could bid on another student. Say a student didn't like me, they could put like $100 on me to have to lick ketchup off of someone's face. And if I didn't have $100 to give to the philanthropy to get out of it, I would just have to be involved with it. It honestly felt like more like hazing in a way, because if you didn't have money to get out of it, like you were being forced to do it.
Students claim those with money to buy out of dares had the upper hand.
Most students can't afford that, especially the lower income. So it was definitely more of like, I think, a bullying. I think they were targeting certain students.
A former student from a wealthy family agrees.
I had money to pay my way out, but some students weren't fortunate for that. Like, some students would choose to skip lunch, and then they were threatened with detention if they didn't go to lunch. So I would beg my parents for hundreds of dollars during that week to ensure I didn't have to participate in the challenges.
The two former students are speaking from their own perspectives, understanding that not everyone will have the same viewpoint on the charity event.
I don't want to speak for all of them, because maybe some didn't care, but I know a lot of us did not want to do these and participate in them, and we couldn't pay it back.
Now that we're older, seeing how wrong it is to have to pay $100 at a school to get out of licking someone's toes, you would think you wouldn't have to do that if you didn't want to. But they would always threaten us, like, it's for charity, you have to do it. No one wants to lick stuff off of people's toes, even if it's for charity.
312-642-5600, Turnkey.pro answer line, 646-36-DA, Turnkey.pro text line. Now that we're out of high school and we're older, we can see how wrong it was, but apparently none of our parents could, or teachers or administrators. So this was a whole culture. And the thing that was telling, you heard the one student say that the whole challenge, $100 to do this, as you heard. But then if you skipped lunch because you didn't have the money to pay out and you didn't want to do one of these grotesque challenges, then you'd get detention. Well, if you're getting detention, that's imposed by school authorities. So they know why you're skipping lunch, and they impose detention as a way to prevent people from skipping lunch and having to do the challenges or pay up so they can raise money. But wait.
It's
all for a good cause.
For the children, Dan. That's all we do. Well, I got to tell you, when the bird thing where you pass.
Oh,
from,
it's disgusting.
That's what fraternities do during Hell Week. I mean, them standing in the garbage can and then pouring their leftover lunches on them. I mean, what did they? I just kept thinking, what did they do during the COVID years?
I don't think
with masks
I don't think that most fraternities and sororities could get away with what they're doing there.
Nowadays, no. Back in the day, they could do much worse.
Yeah, but also, why would you do something gross? It's another reason why I never joined a fraternity.
But it's a health risk too. That is disgusting. The germs. I mean, I am shocked.
Well, it's
that
it's
this keeps getting worse and learning more information.
It's disgusting. But the other thing is what you said before is you see this event that takes place in the gym and it looks like a scene from Eyes Wide Shut.
Yeah.
It is just so wildly inappropriate. And you're talking about mainly minors.
Little
licking
kids.
People.
I know. And then their body, and then some of the girls are getting into it and, like, you know, flipping their hair. I'm like, okay, this is just child pornography. That's what this is. And shame on the... We've got to find out who in the heck started this tradition years ago.
Well, Ryan Walters, who was on Fox, we had some of what he had to say the last time we raised this issue. So, well, there's going to be an investigation, and we're going to find out all the response part. I hope so. But I say again, everybody who was a participant in this in the decision making chain should be bounced.
Yeah.
But then also too, I hope there's going to be some sort of commentary, some sort of inquiry and commentary about parents who knew what you just heard from those students in that Fox affiliate reporting. How could parents not know? Maybe some. How could there be so few parents that know that, and no one raises enough of a issue that this challenge culture continued on for apparently as long as it did? You're talking about, sounds like students, this has been going on for at least years, because you have students who remember it that are now out of high school and college.
I bet it's been going on for a decade.
It's just...
It's mind-blowing.
It really is hard to dream up scenarios. That's why I said Babylon Bee's job is perhaps the most difficult job in the country, trying to satirize our culture. Greg in Jefferson Park.
Hey, good morning, guys. You know what? Where was any adult in the past, 5-10 years that this has been going on? Whether it's the teachers, parents, like you said, the principal, the school boards. Where was anybody? I mean, does, you know, people's health mean anything? Spitting in each other's mouths and all this other crap going on? It's absolutely astonishing that this goes on in, quote, Oklahoma, where everything's all Republican and conservative, right? I'll tell you something, you know, people better get their heads out of their rears, because this country is going down if this keeps going on like this. Biden gets reelected, it's over, man, forever. Guys, have a good one.
All right, Greg, thanks. Marty in Naperville.
What? Why does everybody ask about an investigation? Fire the principal, fire the superintendent right off the bat, press charges if they have to. How can something like this in school go on like this for all these years without it's just unbelievable.
Yeah. Thanks for the call, Mark. No, I mean, I agree. I mean, you know, the buck stops at the superintendent. So you could do a first, I mean, depending on, you know, what the contractual obligations are and so forth, you may have to do a pro forma investigation. But yeah, we know what the authority structure is. So superintendent and principals, you're gone for starters, and then we're going to work our way down the food chain. Pun intended. Rick in Downers Grove.
Hey, good morning. The one that got me is the girl who said that from the wealthier families, they could buy their way out.
Yeah.
I cannot imagine going to mommy and daddy and say, I need $500 today for lunch. It went up a little bit, and they don't question, like, what do you need that kind of money for to go to high school?
Right.
That's what got me.
Yeah, no, it's a good point. Right. That's why it's impossible that some, if not many, if not most of the parents knew about this. That's just how we do it in Edmond, Oklahoma. I don't think that's going to fly. Dan and Amy, Chicago's Morning Answer.
It's news, opinion, insight. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560. The Answer.
That sound means it's time for in-depth history with Frank, the history teacher from Arlington Heights, because there's nothing new in this world. It's just the history we don't know. Frank, take it away.
Good morning. With the news that Ronna Romney McDaniel, after three cycles of underperformance, has finally resigned as RNC chair, It would be instructive to look at a clear example of how important the right leadership can be to a presidential campaign for a minority party, as the Republicans have been for the last 30 years. In 1916, the Democrats were the minority party. The country had narrowly but consistently elected Republican candidates since the Civil War. Democrat Woodrow Wilson won in 1912 because of the Taft-Roosevelt party split. But in 1916, the GOP was now coalescing around a single candidate, Charles Evans Hughes, a former reform governor of New York and just resigned Supreme Court justice, who expected to win. But enter Colonel Edward Mandel House, a non-military man who had elected three governors of Texas and was one of the successful engineers of Wilson's victory in 1912. He knew that organization could be a key element of beating the favored Hughes. The Democrats could count on the South and the Farm Belt states, and most of the industrial Rust Belt and the conservative Northeast would vote for Hughes. But it could be close if Ohio voted for Wilson, and then California's 13 electoral votes might be the difference. As such, House had assiduously organized serious get-out-the-vote efforts in San Diego, Los Angeles, and San Francisco, and was helped when California's progressive Republican governor, Hiram Johnson, did not embrace Hughes. These tactics, along with a major theme that Wilson had kept us out of the war, led to Wilson winning the normally Republican state by less than 4,000 votes and the Electoral College 277 to 254. And I think the lesson for Mr. Trump here is that organization is going to be more important than ornithology.
Bird brain. But don't tell us how that worked out. Did Wilson end up keeping us out of the war in his second term? I don't.
Of course, no. I mean, we talked about this in class. He says this thing, he kept us out of the war. Then what happened? Zimmerman note, we're in the war in 1917. And, you know, the same thing happened with Lyndon Johnson, 1964. You know, he was campaigning on keeping our boys out of Vietnam. And then what happens? 1965, we're up to 200,000 troops, up to 500,000 by 1967, I think.
Yeah.
So
beware of campaign promises. That's a lesson we should have learned by now. The other thing that's fun about this segment is the normally conservative Northeast and the reliably Republican California. By times have changed in the last 100 years.
Well, let's remember Calvin Coolidge, probably the most conservative president of the 20th century, was from the Northeast. He was from Vermont. So it used to be, they were very pro-union, very conservative up there back in the day. And now, of course, we only get Susan Collins from Maine. She's the only senator from there.
And in Vermont, Bernie Sanders, nobody's even told Bernie Sanders that COVID's over.
Right. I guess
very
not.
Sad. Yeah. He's still wandering around with a mask on. Yeah.
Everywhere he
goes. Houses too, or something
like
that.
Yeah, he does have three houses.
Yeah, and one failed college. All right, Frank, very good as always. We were talking about high school education. Well, where Frank teaches, his students are lucky. I assume you're not raising money by having kids lick peanut butter and chocolate off each other, right?
Oh, no, of course not.
Yeah, okay, good to know. All right, thanks, Frank. Dan and Amy, Chicago's Morning Answer. Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. John Cantanzara, the president of Chicago FOP, FOP Lodge 7, said he voted for Eileen Burke for state's attorney.
Uh-oh.
He also said that Clayton Harris would be a step up from Kim Fox, which drew responses from both campaigns distancing themselves from John Cantanzara for being complimentary.
Right, yeah.
The Burke campaign rejected his endorsement, called his comments inappropriate. I voted for you. That's inappropriate.
That is hate speech. I don't feel safe.
The spokeshuman for Burke's campaign, given the working relationship between the state's attorney's office and the Chicago Police Department, it was inappropriate for the FOP to issue this political statement. What? But here's my question, though. I mean, seriously. The battered wife syndrome in Chicago and Illinois politics. Please accept my endorsement. Oh no, you're the police.
So no, we don't want it.
I can't be affiliated with the police in a race in the Democrat Socialist primary for Cook County State's attorney.
And Cook County State's attorneys work with police and investigators. Okay. And then Burke's campaign claimed that Harris met with FOP leaders and asked for their support. Oh, the drama.
And then Harris claimed that Burke's being funded by Republicans, and this is an example of it because Ken Zara has been, you know, said positive things about Republicans and Trump and was critical of Democrats. And I mean,
it's such a soap. This is so Chicago.
But I mean, I mean, my question, with all due respect.
Yes, sir.
Is why would John Catanzara, why would he bother? I mean, he's this is the battered wife, the political version of the battered wife syndrome. Mm-hmm. Why are you wanting to help Burke? Why not just say not Harris, because that's a continuation of Fox, if that's what you believe, which is what I believe, or stay out of it altogether, or say, look, both of these people and Fioretti in the general election have to prove that they're going to represent a change in the way that laws are enforced in Cook County. So what do we have to go on? I mean, I guess we have Burke's judicial records, pretty thin, and we have Clayton Harris's statements, which are generally pretty concerning and pretty indicative that it will be a continuation of the same. Maybe he's slightly more competent, but he's still...
Same policies.
You know, Preckwinkle-backed and, you know, identitarian-oriented. All right. Well, let's talk to him. John Catanzara, Chicago FOP president. John, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
Good morning. How are you?
Good. So you know, what are you doing?
Yeah. What's up?
Well, here's the simple thought. Remaining silent wasn't an option. You know, we did that with the mayor's race, and look how that happened. It's just a fact, because if we don't say anything, if I don't say anything, and I represent 17,000 members, period, and if Clayton Harris ends up winning, the first thing I would be challenged for is not saying anything about this race. Why did we stay out of it? And I was at a forum, and this is probably the genesis of all of this, with the Michigan Avenue Retail Association. So it was all the hotel GMs, all the store owners, big wigs along Michigan Avenue. And both candidates were there. And the reality is Clayton Harris prefaces this by saying, I understand the audience I'm speaking to when I say this, but he was asked about the shoplifting threshold for $1,000 against the statute. And he says he agrees with Kim Fox's policy on that. I mean, mm-hmm. How tone deaf can you possibly be to say that to them? It'd be like saying, I don't agree with a murder charge to a room of law enforcement officers. It was so stupid, but nonetheless,
but
he
he's
said
telling
it.
The truth. But that's what he's going to do, though. No, right.
But it's not stupid. What he's telling you and what Eileen Burke is telling you and what Clayton Harris is telling you don't matter. I don't understand why people don't get that. You don't matter. I'm here to present, like, you know, okay, yeah, I care about business people and so on and so forth, but you are down the pecking order. I have a constituency that has nothing to do with you and is more important than you. That's what they're saying to retailers. That's what they're saying to police.
No. The judge, to be clear, the judge did not say that. Clayton Harris said that.
I understand, but that's I get it. So Clayton Harris is saying it in this instance, but the judge is saying it in your instance.
Well, no, the judge was very clear that she's going to follow the statute of felony shoplifting.
No. In your interest in saying, John Catanzara, I reject his endorsement. He shouldn't say he voted for me.
I mean, I understand their statement. I mean, they there is a fear, and you are right to some degree. It's a little ludicrous at this point that they're so fearful of being pro-law enforcement, and me specifically. And of course, you knew they couldn't wait to go back to the Trump days and all of that nonsense, yada, yada, yada. Mm-hmm. But I made an offer to both of those candidates because I spoke to them both after they were done. And I said, if you are interested, I will do everything I can to get a representative from every law enforcement agency in Cook County at the FOP for a forum where you can speak directly to every single police department in the county. Neither one of them took me up on that.
So what does that tell you?
There's a fear that, you know, and I understand, and they prefaced it also by saying, you know, if there's misconduct, they're going to be in charge. She is going to be in charge with charging an officer for misconduct. We understand that. And we weren't asking, you know, okay, man, our person, you know, we got the winner and now we expect this X, Y, and Z. We expect the state's attorney to do their job and follow through on the hard work that the men and women, specifically of the Chicago Police Department, but in this whole county do and make sure that criminals stay in jail. There's still a chink in the armor here because the police are doing yeoman's work every single day. Now it's literally a state's attorney who picks and chooses winners and losers, and then the judges. So, you know, there's some great judges, there's some horrible judges, but the policy set forth by Tim Evans is a whole other problem here. So even if we have a much better state's attorney that's doing the right thing, we still have that problem with the policies from Tim Evans down the line at the court system. So,
You guys never met with Burke or with Harris. Have you met with Bob Fioretti?
Who hasn't? Bob's everywhere.
Well, I mean, are you going to be supporting him in the general election?
No.
Why not?
There's no chance, as I said.
Just say it.
Snowball's got a better chance in hell. It's a sad reality. Bob is a perpetual candidate at this point. I don't know why, but I wish there was other options, but there isn't.
Well, you know, on that point, I mean, this is my constant lament of the Republican Party, which I know is that's not your bailiwick, but the principle applies here. You see, you know, these Republican donors coming in for Eileen Burke, like Craig Duchossois and stuff like that, just like we did with Vallis, and they completely don't understand the landscape, but that's fine. It's their money to waste. They can do whatever they want. Here's an idea. When you look at how a race is shaping up after 8 years of Kim Fox, maybe FOP takes the lead. Maybe some civic leaders that have significant business interests take the lead. I don't really care who takes the lead. But maybe say, you know what? We should put together a little coalition group to try to recruit a candidate or two that we think could actually be viable and could do things like restore the rule of law in Chicago and not be a toady for the police or just enforce the law and fight with the judges as necessary to make sure that habitual violent criminals are removed from the streets. That's all we want to do. If we could just accomplish that, then we could make material improvement in the city very quickly. But so why doesn't that ever happen from your perspective?
Well, I don't really worry about party affiliations.
I'm not talking about party affiliation either. I'm talking. I could be a Democrat.
But I think we have that candidate.
Together.
I think we have that candidate in Judge Burke. I really do. I think it's going to be a night and day difference from where the state's attorney's office is now to where it could be under her. Period.
Why do you believe that?
Because everybody I have spoken to personally about her professional mindset, whether it's state's attorneys, whether it's private practice attorneys, everybody has a glowing recommendation of her just basic moral values.
Okay.
And I think.
So should we all pull a Democratic primary ballot? I've been thinking about it.
Yeah, absolutely. That's what I encouraged all of our membership to do. And the funny part is now they're calling that election interference. I mean, typical. But again, Clayton Harris reached out to my PAC director, but he's going to sit there and then say he wasn't seeking our endorsement. It's just BS. And it just goes to question his honesty, which isn't surprising because he's a Preckwinkle plant.
I've heard from people that know Burke too, and they say nice things about her, and that's wonderful. From my experience, when people, and this was a problem with Vallis too, by the way. So there's a recent example in case this is a new concept to some people listening. My experience is when candidates are cowardly and disingenuous when they're running, but think they're being real clever politically, it doesn't translate well to when they get elected. That's a tell in terms of who they are. So they may be a wonderful person, a wonderful family person, and they do great things, and they're involved in charity, and they have an honor code with respect to how they govern their lives. Except in politics, you have to be courageous. And I'm from her candidacy. It is not exactly exuding courage. So I would just say, okay, it's great to have all these testimonials from people she's worked with, professional colleagues and some, but when somebody is behaving like a coward as a candidate, you can bet more times than not that they're going to behave the same way in public office. That's all I'll say.
I understand what you're saying, but it is still politics at the end of the day. And you can stand up and you can say, I'm for X, Y, and Z. That doesn't mean you're going to get elected. You still have to win the race. And there is absolutely still a mindset in this population that the police are bad and sad, but many of them get all their information from the little thing that I'm talking to you on right now. Mm-hmm. And that's the extent of their world. They are very minimally informed on what really matters and what's really happening in this city and in this county. That's just the state of politics today.
So, I know, but you're never going to move that needle in terms of persuasion if only one side, the anti-police side, is making the argument. You have to have people that make the arguments.
But you can't stand solely on just principle and lose and change the needle
that.
Either.
You I'm have not saying to
do
that
it from the inside.
You I'm not saying that,
first.
But rejecting your endorsement, is such a tell. I mean, it's so unnecessary. I'm not saying you have to do William Jennings Bryan yourself on the foot of the FOP, but rejecting your endorsement, it's unnecessary. It speaks of fear.
Well, there's no doubt, and listen, the Vallis campaign, and I personally. Had became good friends with Paul, and it was very frustrating from the outside looking in when he has political advisors telling him to distance himself from the police and from the FOP and from John Catanzara.
Yeah.
And literally the Mr. Rogers routine of, you know, trying to be friends with everybody instead of standing for something cost him the race, in my opinion.
Cost him the race. He's
and
being
then made
political.
Comments about Ron DeSantis.
He was being so political. Stupid. He was pandering to all the right Holy people to pander to. And then what happened?
Well, but politics is a blood sport, and if you're not willing to throw some haymakers on a regular basis and just to start throwing light jabs, I think that's what ended up happening here. But
yeah.
I don't think that that's necessarily the case here. I think she's very outspoken about what she believes law enforcement and literally law and order needs to be going forward. That's refreshing. So it's a delicate balance between, you know, you don't want to seem like you're 100%, you know, lock them up and law enforcement's the best thing.
I got it.
Are you going to run for mayor again sometime?
Again? He didn't run for mayor.
No, he didn't. You were thinking about it, though.
I was strongly considering it, and he's already got me strongly considering it because I didn't think he'd really ruin this city until after the convention, but he seems to not be wasting any time whatsoever.
Well, what about those violence interrupters? How are those working out?
Yeah.
Oh, they're working out wonderful, aren't they? I mean, I can go on and on and on, especially about the pro-union mayor who it couldn't be anything but more anti-union with every stance that he's taken. It's just this guy is so clueless. He's taking advice from a guy who has no idea what he's doing in Jason Lee. I mean, nobody's even talking about a fundraiser still. It went literally a half a day through a news cycle, a couple comments about it. Jason Lee's mother from Texas is doing fundraisers up here in Chicago. But literally, there's nothing to see here. I mean, it's just disgusting.
What about, I mean, I know you were encouraged by the choice of Snelling for police superintendent, but I also recognize that, you know, he operates at the pleasure of the mayor. But what is that relationship like? What's your assessment of the job he's doing?
I couldn't be happier. We couldn't be happier. You know,
okay.
I'm not going to say everything's perfect, and I've had conversations with the superintendent, and, you know, we've talked about certain topics. I wish there was a first deputy, number two in command. I think it's been quite a long time to this point to not have a number two. That's the one, I think, resounding refrain that comes from our membership is, you know, the structure of the upper echelon of this department needs to be squared away sooner rather than later, especially with the convention coming up so quick, which is going to be a whole nother level of insanity, I think, that this city's probably not expecting. We can talk in platitudes and loveliness, but I just don't think that that's what's going to end up happening in the DNC convention.
Mm-hmm. Well, what about the shots?
But I do look forward to protesting shoulder to shoulder with our brothers and sisters in Local 2 in the fire department.
Yeah.
Okay.
And real quick, ShotSpotter. How is that a good tool for you and all the officers out there?
Man, this whole argument is just so stupid, and the stance by the mayor's office, but it just goes to speak to where their mindset is. And it's about, we don't want more people in jail because they're going to be black and brown. And I mean, it's this whole goofy black and brown argument, but that's the reality is they know ShotSpotter is an effective tool to alert the police to somebody with a weapon, and they don't want more people arrested. Full stop.
Is your relationship with Brandon Johnson, is it basically, I mean, it's not as openly hostile as it was toward the end with Lightfoot in terms of the press, being in the press, sniping at each other. But what is the relationship like with Johnson and the city council? Have there been any improvements since the Lightfoot reign?
Well, I mean, she was just mean, nasty, and vindictive. He's just clueless is about the best word I can use.
Well,
I
mean, he's mean, too.
He's just, you know, but I don't know. I'll give him credit. You know, he did come to the lodge for our suicide dedication. He said nice things when he needed to say nice things. But his policies are just horrible. And it's literally like he's the Manchurian candidate. The far left got their candidate in, and I don't even know. He's like a puppet at this point. He's being told what to do. And we make the joke, he's like the dog that chased the car. He caught the bumper. Now he doesn't know what to do with the car. It's literally, he's being told every single step and every single policy to engage, and it is slowly eroding the city. So it's a totally different approach. It's probably more destructive at the end of the day than the really kind of loud, mean, vindictive person that was there prior to him. But it's going to make 2027 a very interesting race, to say the least.
If we get there. John Canzara, President FOP Lodge 7, of course, Chicago FOP. John, thanks as always. Appreciate it.
Thank you. Have a good day.
Thank you. And he joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
The stories you need to know to start your day. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer.
Insert Democrat socialist here.
Runs the Democratic House law for 30-plus years running. He's promising this and he's stealing that. Where can you get that kind of money? He's using your house like his own piggy bank. You ought to know by now. You can pay off your house here in Illinois, but you can never keep up with the taxes. Oh, how it's always been the plan to have a taxpayer pay no doubt. Not a matter of if anymore, but when you're moving out. I said, when you're moving out.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. Interesting development in the state of Alabama. Governor Kay Ivey pushing through school choice for all in the state of Alabama, which makes the home state of George Wallace now more enlightened than the land of Lincoln.
Yep, the 14th state, right, to do that.
Alabama.
Alabama.
Is less segregated than Illinois under your glorious Democrat socialist leadership. Discussion in the General Assembly the other day, inane, as most are. Blaine Willhauer is a Republican state rep downstate. Kim Buckner is a Chicago Democrat state rep and, well, Democrat socialist. And he was a candidate for mayor, you may remember.
I remember very well.
He is really just sort of a big doofus, as far as I can tell. But this was the discussion, arguing about whether or not CPS is doing a bang-up job in educating kids.
Folks, the folks in this body should be ashamed. The vast majority of the Chicago's black students can't read. They can't do math at grade level.
Okay, she will.
First off, much like my my Chicago Public School classmate, Leader Evans, I'm a little flabbergasted at the gentleman from the 110th District's diatribe. As a Chicago black student who reads very well, I will say that for those in my district who have reading comprehension issues, I would welcome the representative to refund some of the money that Chicago sends to your district to help us out.
Yeah. So Chicago is the only school district in the state, not the only, but it's one of the few, certainly the biggest, that is primarily funded by state dollars, not local property tax dollars. So if you want to get into the business of refunding based on percentage that comes from local versus percentage that comes from state, Cam Buckner, CPS is going to get fleeced. So I wouldn't necessarily want to go down that road, smart guy, number one. Number two, it's a money problem. What are the numbers? We're going to get the numbers. We'll refresh our recollection. I'll let Ted Dabrowski give you the numbers since, you know, he's the numbers guy and I'm just a guy who rants on the radio. But just, we need an incrementally more money for CPS, and that's the problem with the failure to educate kids such that they're reading and doing math at grade level. I mean, the numbers among black students is they're under 1 in 5. So just a little bit more money. Cam, how much? How much do you need to turn it all around? Love to button him on that issue, but, you know, he's a coward. I know he played football for Illinois, but he's just a big, dopey coward.
Oh, yeah, and he wouldn't help at all during COVID and trying to get kids back on the gridiron.
This is what Cam Buckner is up to, too, in the House when he's not telling everybody how well he reads. Legislation he sponsored. This is, you know, for you scoring at home, there's so much legislation roaming around there you'd be very proud of. House Bill 4195 requires a contractor or person employed to deliver goods from a store or restaurant through a third-party delivery service to use a non-carbon-emitting mode of transportation while making such deliveries. Translation, if you use a third-party delivery service like, I don't know, Uber Eats, is that a third-party? Or one of the others that preceded Uber Eats, and you're in Cook County because this applies to counties with a population of 3 million or more, so that's Cook County only. You got to use a bike.
What's
a non-carbon emitting mode of transportation?
A bike, walking, yeah.
Yeah,
bike. Scooter, electric scooter, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So Divvy.
Where's the electricity come from? It's indirectly a emitting mode of transportation. Cam Buckner is very worried about that. Among the many, many, and we've talked about some of the other great legislative measures that are bouncing around, mandating gay climate change propaganda in high school. I don't know if it's one or both, some mashup. DEI in med schools, making it easier for people in this country, in the state and country, illegally to get in-state college tuition, of course, so they can go to U of I like Cam Buckner did. But your kid with the 35 on the ACT and the 4.0 at Naperville North, sorry, he's not getting in.
Nope.
Mandate Chicago businesses hire security guards. That's on you. Provide for your security. Yeah, I thought you said tax dollars pay for my security. No, no. Then, you know, removing Blackhawks and Redskins and all the other offensive nicknames in terms of high school mascots, all kinds of good legislation bouncing around, the kind of legislation that the majority of this state and certainly the city of Chicago support. That's why they send the likes of Cam Buckner down there. Ted Dabrowski, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
Good morning, Dan. Good morning, Amy.
So, Cam Buckner reads well. How about, the rest of the current class at CPS from K through 12, how are their numbers shaking out?
Yeah, they don't do very well, and you got to wonder whether, you know, Cam Buckner reads well, but he's never reading what's happening at CPS, or he doesn't care, or he ignores it. It's hard to know, and I would like to think that a guy like Cam Buckner is as progressive as he might be, or socialist, is that, you know, he would care about. I mean, this list of schools where zero kids can read. You go to Hirsch Metropolitan High School, 0% of the black kids there can read at grade level. Zero can do math at grade level. Chicago Excel Academy, I like that name, Excel Academy, 0% and 0%. Fenger, 0 and 0. Dunbar, 0 and 0. Austin College, 0 and 0. I can just go down the list. Kids can't read, they can't do math. And, you know, and it's broader than that when you look at just, you know, by South Side and West Side. On the South Side, just 8% of kids can do math at grade level. On the West Side, it's 7%. In Southwest Side, 7%. In other words, these kids are going to fail. I mean, obviously, some of them will rise out of this, but most will be trapped. And a guy like Buckner, he's a law school grad. He's a football player, Illinois. He's a successful guy by his own measures. And he had a chance to maybe not take on the state rep from downstate, Representative Willauer, but instead of taking him on, he could have said, "Hey, let's do something." Of course, that would never happen. He would never agree with Willauer from a political perspective. But these are chances for these guys to get engaged in the failure CPS, and they don't.
No, they just say that. What failure? What failure are you talking about? And to the extent there's any failure, it's more money. I mean, it's worked for this long. They're sitting in the supermajority. Why would they stop? Why would they stop?
Yeah.
I want to ask you about, speaking of the CTU and CPS, this Friday, they're taking the kids out of school to march to the polls. It's called the Parade to the Polls. So they're going to have a little party, listen to political organizers and politicians and candidates, and then march to the polls. Is this legal for them to take kids out of school to do this?
Well, they're claiming it's a nonpartisan thing. We're just teaching them about civics and engagement and voting. Yeah. But I tell you, people should see how well organized these guys are. I mean, not only are they so well organized as a union, but then they're going in and taking the students out, taking them to learn how to vote and show them how to vote, take them to a rally. Part of that rally right now includes the Bring Chicago Home people who will say we need a tax hike on the sale of big buildings in Chicago. And, the kids will learn and then, hopefully vote for that, and they become very good future CTU members.
Did you read this thing?
Yeah, there's one wrinkle to it, though. I mean, they're going to need some aid if and when they do vote, because they can't read. So you want to make sure they select the right candidates.
But they're so seductive in this letter that they wrote. Like, do you remember your first time voting? Were you nervous, excited, confused at what to do? Well, we have an answer for you. I mean, it's so disgusting.
That's the thing that most ordinary Chicago residents have no clue of. I mean, of course, they buy into most of this, but they also just don't know this stuff happens, and to the extent that it does. So this is why it's so entrenched. We have the primary next Tuesday, nothing will change other than we'll be either become a little bit more progressive and a little bit more socialist, or stay about the same.
I got some other exciting legislation. I don't know if you've got anything, if you've picked out your favorite yet, in terms of what's bouncing around Springfield. But there's a Kaler is Senator Kaler. He's sponsoring legislation, Senate Bill 1556, which mandates that two state regulators, the Illinois EPA and the Illinois Pollution Control Board, establish a clean transportation standard and reduce the use of carbon-based fuels by Illinois drivers on our roads. The two agencies would assign state-mandated deficits to fossil fuels like gasoline and diesel, which for consumers means they will pay more every time they put those products in their vehicles. Good. He's sort of flying in formation with Cam Buckner, eliminating carbon-emitting modes of transportation when it comes to delivering food. This is wonderful. Now, this will increase the cost of gas in the state, but, to save the planet, Oregon, the examples provided by a trade association here, Fuel and Retailer Association, Oregon Clean Fuel Mandates added 7 cents a gallon to a gallon of gas. Washington State expects its per gallon gas accord to soar 40 cents per gallon in the next decade. The average cost of gasoline in California now is $4.87 per gallon. And in point of fact, Illinois topped California for the highest taxes on gas already, because, of course, under Governor Jelly Belly, we doubled the state's gas tax, and then it's indexed for inflation. So, we're going to chase down California is what I'm hearing from the Cam Buckners and the David Kalers. And this is all good.
Yeah, we've hit that issue so much. When Pritzker doubled the gas tax, that was one. You said he indexed it to inflation, which is another. And what most people don't know is that we have two taxes on gasoline in Illinois.
How about a third? Let's make a third.
Well, yeah, let's make it a third. And so, you know, we have this sales tax on it where as the gas prices go up, well, the tax goes up. So now let's add on more. It's just another, you know, it's just add it to the list of crazy things that we're doing now that will chase out people and then, of course, increase the welfare state. And then we'll just be in that spiral that we're in right now.
Well, the taxes could go to support Jawaharlal Williams's legislation. This is, for those of you scoring at home, that's House Bill 4929. That would amend Illinois' insurance code. Provides that a group or individual policy of accident and health insurance or managed care plan that is amended, delivered, issued, or renewed on or after January 1st of next year shall provide coverage or reimbursement for gym memberships. It's the gym full employment program. It's the gym backdoor bailout. The coverage or reimbursement required under the provisions is $50 a month. So now we're going to mandate $50 a month rebate from your health insurance provider as it pertains to your gym membership. That won't quite cover the cost at East Bank, but maybe at some other places. And we can use the money that we're saving from, the money that we're taxing from on gas to fund the gym memberships that allow people to walk or ride a bike when they deliver food. You see how it all fits together?
Yeah. Just tie it all together.
Yeah. I mean, they're really thinking this is what we call comprehensive lawmaking, Ted.
We're good at it. Now, you know, what's interesting too is that, you know, insurance is no longer insurance. It's just got embedded a bunch of fixed fees in it that we pay for. So forget the word insurance.
How about the Bear Stadium? We got to mention that. So the Bears now looking at that south parking lot for a dome stadium. It cost $5 billion, and maybe looking for $2 billion in financing from the state. Combined with the White Sox need $1 billion, and all of a sudden I'm hearing word out of Springfield that the Democrats are softening to the idea of taxpayer underwriting of a new Bear Stadium, because of course you want to keep them in Chicago. I assume season ticket packages will be in the deal for legislators. And then White Sox is the same deal. You know, let's combine the ask into one big deal. Let's run to the old Sports Finance Authority. Everybody's a winner. The Lakefront, the South Loop, and Chicago and Illinois. I mean, except the taxpayers.
What could go wrong, right? What could go wrong?
Yeah.
So the Bears were saying, hey, they'll chip in $2 billion. Which means that there's a whole bunch more to be spent, right? Because if they're saying they'll chip in and they want to make it, quote, a public-private investment. And it doesn't include the White Sox in that. So at some point, the White Sox are going to have to say, well, here's our bit that we want in, too. And the question is, and I think you had somebody on the show the other day, these investments in stadiums from a public perspective are not good. And we don't know eventually what happens, but this is, again, just more and more of the making the state, meaning the taxpayers, pay more and more of these burdens for some people to enjoy. I mean, it's really cool, right? I mean, everybody'd love to have a great indoor stadium in Chicago. I mean, some people want the outside, but you know, here you go again, more public debt, more taxes, and, you know, it just keeps adding up. And
well, we still owe $500 million for the first Bears project that took place 20 years ago. And now, according to the Sun-Times, they're urging the Bears to consider Michael Reese Hospital site for the Dome Stadium to avoid any lakefront legal battles. Such drama.
Well, I'll tell you, I mean, maybe if the city threw in there, like, they could co-locate one of those Gimme Dat grocery stores that Brandon Johnson's going to set up, and maybe put a Gimme Dat gym next to it. Some Gimme Dat housing for the migrants.
Really big ones.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I see the master plan coming into focus. This is exciting times. Ted Dabrowski, president of Wirepoints, wirepoints.org, all things Illinois policy related. Thanks, Ted.
You guys have a great day.
Thanks, you too. And he joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
Listen to Dan and Amy on your smartphone. Download the AM560 mobile app today at 560theanswer.com/mobile.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. So as we began discussing yesterday, Haiti is descended into full warlordocracy. Its interim prime minister, who was appointed after the assassination of its previous prime minister, Ariel Henry has resigned, and this was coming out of a summit of the Caribbean nations, including representatives from America in Jamaica. Now it appears, according to reporting, that the gang leader in charge of the country is a guy who goes by the nickname Barbecue because he likes to burn people alive. He's the leader of the notorious G9 and Family Gang. Gross. And there's also a video that shows a member of his gang eating human body parts. Video on X shows a Haitian man tearing flesh from the leg of a burning corpse and eating it.
Oh, God damn.
So that's what's going on in Haiti as a non-essential personnel at the U.S. Embassy in Port-au-Prince have been evacuated. And, of course, this is important both from a humanitarian perspective in terms of the poorest country in the Western Hemisphere already struggles with starvation issues, and now this further descent into madness and what that will mean for what we're able to do to try to save the lives of, you know, the regular Haitian people. So that's one piece of it. And, of course, the other piece is, and we talked to Steve Bucci from the Heritage Foundation about this yesterday, scrambling Coast Guard maritime resources because you're going to have people, as we've seen intermittently over the years, trying to escape Haiti and land on our shores. And so that just further exacerbates our problem at the border, considering this administration is not interested in enforcing immigration policy and providing the American people with border security. So it's going to get worse. Certainly in the short term, it's going to get worse. And for more on this, we talked about this a little bit before, but there's a new documentary out called Border Invasion. I have to talk a little bit about that. I like a different sort of I word than invasion that most people are using, as we've discussed. But Border Invasion, American Crisis is the new film that's being done by Chad Catton in conjunction with our very own Salem Media. Here's a trailer for that documentary.
And within a matter of 2 months, Joe Biden went from the most secure border ever to historic illegal immigration. So he opened the floodgates.
I would, in fact, make sure that we immediately surge to the border. All those people are seeking asylum.
Biden has created this border crisis by allowing these folks to come across our border, and that has been detrimental to our country.
They have deliberately opened the border to fundamentally change the fabric of our country.
Now Americans across the country are bracing for the end of Title 42 as thousands of migrants wait along the Mexican side of the border.
Officials telling NBC News most migrants are now being released into the U.S.
It is becoming harder and harder not to conclude that the border crisis is intentional.
We have over 200,000 illegal aliens that have been flown in from their home country directly into the U.S.
Nearly 2,000 migrants were moved from Floyd Bennett Field to James Madison High School, forcing those students there to learn remotely yesterday.
I see towers here with cameras mounted. And how many of these do they have down the
pike? Oh, a bunch of them. Frequency. All over the place.
And do any of them work?
No.
The last president obviously was very firm in, I'm going to build a wall.
We will build the wall, don't worry. We will build the wall.
Majority of these people are fighting-age men. We are watching as we're being invaded.
We have untold numbers of terrorists who have entered our country.
When we were getting ready, I just got a call from some intel that there's possibly 20 to 50 Pakistani nationals, possibly on the terror watch list, coming through right behind us here at Eagle Pass,
where a federal judge has ordered the Biden administration to stop cutting that razor wire and allowing the illegals to come in.
When I was living in Iran, their teachings
is about destroying America. And they believe that they will destroy America within. You can't put the policy of your country in the hands of evil people.
That brings us back to the realization that elections have consequences.
All of the horrible things that an open border means. What I'm most angry about, a two-year-old girl crossing this river on top of his father's shoulders. Joe Biden, you can go straight to hell.
Wow.
For more on this, pleased to be joined by Chad Catton, Veterans for America First National Director of Operations. The film, again, Border Invasion, an American Crisis. Chad, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
It's my pleasure, Dan. I appreciate you having us.
So, you know, Senator John Kennedy in the trailer saying at some point, you know, it becomes obvious this is intentional. Right. This is intentional. It's not an invasion. It's an importation by this administration.
Invasion, importation, at the end of the day, doesn't matter. We have a bunch of these people coming into our country that are not in any way, shape or form being vetted on the concept of what it is to become part of the fabric of this country. The idea of the Statue of Liberty and what it stands for in our immigration policy as a country in a melting pot has been gone for a very long time. And this is absolutely, whatever we want to call it, not good for this country in any way, shape or form. And the policies of the Biden regime are nothing short of treasonous.
Christopher Wray was before a Senate committee yesterday and talked about the gang related crime at the hands of gang members from other countries that's occurring on U.S. soil. He talked about the drug trafficking. They've seized enough fentanyl, the FBI has, that could have killed 270 million people or something like this. And then he also talked about human smuggling, and the human smugglers have ties to ISIS. The facilitators of these international human smuggling operations have ties to international terrorist organizations. I wasn't clear on what exactly the FBI and the larger federal law enforcement community is doing about those problems.
Well, I don't know how they can. I'm just based on resources chasing people around for January 6th and other conservatives out there because the Biden regime doesn't like it. They've been using lawfare for a very long time. And the FBI, with multiple whistleblowers that are out there, I don't know how they could have enough resources to go after the scourge that's coming across our border and tribing up into these gangs so that they can better themselves by feeding off of the American citizens. This is real. And the FBI has been very short of what their concept of law enforcement has been for quite a while since Biden took office, and their purge of any person that is about doing what the Constitution says, and other than what the liberal left dictates. I mean, the FBI, a lot of our federal law enforcement, with the exception of our Border Patrol, who has still stood against Biden in every way, shape, or form, just to tell him, your policy is terrible. But every other law enforcement that's ran by the federal government has been basically infiltrated by the left and is being used as the SS, if you will. Mm.
And so, I mean, if what, you know, where are we for the next 6 months? I mean, is there something that you would recommend ordinary Americans do as they're, especially in big cities, being implored by their elected officials to, if they have rental property, to rent them out to people that are in this country illegally or perhaps pending asylum, have pending asylum applications? They're providing all sorts of taxpayer funding for rent and for furnishings and for food and for all of these things. So that's what's happening in America's big cities. And nobody is walking back the sanctuary city designations. So maybe the closest we've come is Eric Adams saying, yeah, there should probably be a carve out so we can turn repeat violent offenders over to ICE. That's about as grand a concession as anybody has offered from that perspective of being pro sanctuary city. So is it just endure it and watch this all play out and wait for early voting to start? Or is there something else that you would tell people to do?
First off, there in Chicago, my buddy Mark Carter is trying to flip Chicago red. He is out there talking to the African-American community to how egregious the immigration policy of Chicago is. just because Mark's doing it in his neighborhood, and the rest of you should go to your city council, fill that thing, go in there, be loud, tell them that you are our representatives. This has to stop. The only thing that politicians are more worried about than anything is the money stopping into their campaigns or the rise of the people. They can't stand it because most of them are shills that stand behind their ivory tower, and at the end of the day, answer to globalists or the big money firms out there that are keeping them in office. The people are the most scary things in the world, and our forefathers knew that. That's why it says we the people at the top of the Constitution and not them and their people.
So, Chad, in this documentary, Border Invasion and American Crisis, do you follow a group from, you know, the time when they cross into America illegally and then when they get placed in shelters?
No, this isn't that film. This film is more about the raw of what's really happening at that meridian line, if you will, the border. Victor Avila, who ran for Congress down there and was a Border Patrol agent, he tells a lot of his story and explains what they're seeing down there and what's happening. This is the raw of what's coming across in its raw form with professionals that have dealt with this. Victor Avila's story is amazing. As an ICE officer, he was shot in the chest and three times in the leg, and his partner was killed. And it's new information. I just talked to Tom Holman at CPAC, and more information from Victor has come out. When he wasn't killed on the border, he was killed in Mexico. I mean, shot in Mexico.
Yeah.
And what he was being sent there from his higher-ups at ICE sent him into Mexico to go pick up boxes. He thought it was for witness or for a case. And come to find out, it was his boss's tchotchkes from his old house.
Oh,
it was
God.
Things from his house. And they drove down this highway that was known to be ran by the Zetas. And the Zetas ambushed this vehicle and opened fire after they ran him off the road. And it took almost 40 minutes for a helicopter or any help to come from the embassy because Victor Avila was able to get on the phone. They were sent into harm's way to get some supervisor's crap. And now the government, yeah, there's no change of custody forms anymore because they don't want the American people to know what we're in those boxes. This is treasonous. This is problems with our government that only we the people can do, not just at the voting box, but make them uncomfortable.
Yeah, I mean, there's some stuff that is really disturbing, too. I mean, I go back to the 85,000 children that have entered unaccompanied that the federal government has lost track of. And then you see some of the guerrilla reporting by like the James O'Keefe's of the world, also Muckraker, on people that seem to be in the business of moving kids around the country, and they're at what they could be at hotels, but the hotels are cordoned off, and they sort of have a feel of a CIA black site. That people are caught at the airport with kids, and they won't answer any questions, and they're hiding their faces. And then there's questions about the kind of money the federal government is and state governments are providing foster care services with questionable reputations for providing for a safe environment for kids. So there's this whole other exploitation piece that there's just a lot of opacity around. And I would think that, you know, for more fair-minded, decent people, you'd be very concerned. You know, you're all pro-immigrant, and then you see kids disappearing and kids being exploited, or certainly questions going unanswered about what exactly are authorities doing, moving kids from point A to point B. No explanation, and a lot of money sloshing around. It's very concerning.
You're absolutely right. And Josh Hawley had an HHS secretary there in Senate, I think it was 8 months ago, and actually said, that do you know where these kids are? Is it not true these kids are going into sex trafficking and if not sweatshops? And they admitted to the fact that they don't know where some of them are, and that yes, this has been brought to light. But they're not changing course on policy. They continue to do this, and if we can't take care of and what makes us Americans the most the people in our society, even the immigrants that are, you know, they're in a position where they can't protect themselves. And
right.
Here we are feeding the pedophilia industry in this country through immigration. this is the most egregious thing that's happened in this country for a very long time. And look, these kids were sent up there and they just follow the herd and go where they need to go. They don't know what's ahead of them. And what usually is ahead of them is something very dire, very ugly, and something that none of us, we could ever, ever think that we could endure in our adult life, let alone as a child.
He is Chad Catton. He's Veterans for America First National Director of Operations. The film, Border Invasion, An American Crisis, it's done in partnership with Salem Media. I assume you get that at the Salem Now portal. Chad, thanks so much for joining us. Appreciate it.
It was my pleasure. Thanks, guys.
Thank you. And he joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
It's what Chicago is talking about. It's Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan and Amy on AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. Talking about the situation in Haiti with the this gang leader that goes by the nickname Barbecue, apparently now in charge, or at least the most powerful warlord in that country at this moment. He again, he's known as Barbecue because he likes to burn victims alive. And he and some of his friends apparently dabble in a little bit of cannibalism as well.
Okay, please, can I? Is this on social media? I hope to God not.
The videos?
Yeah.
I think the videos were, and some were taken down. I'm sure you could find them.
And just remember, this is where the Clintons honeymooned in Haiti. I mean, of course, it wasn't as bad as it is now, but...
This was a big project of the Clinton Foundation to turn Haiti around, yeah.
With their cell phones. Everybody has a cell phone in Haiti.
Well, if it doesn't work out for Barbecue in Haiti, he could always start life anew in Naperville, where I'm sure he would be welcomed. And I mean that sincerely. Let me give you an example of what I'm talking about.
Please
when it
do.
Comes to these awfuls, these angry white leftist females, and what a cancer they are. Amanda Kajira. She is a civic journalist and activist in Haiti. This is a story that is 15 years old.
Okay.
14 years old. 2 weeks ago on a Monday morning, I started to write what I thought was a very clever editorial about violence against women in Haiti. The case, I believed, was being overstated by women's organizations in need of additional resources. Ever committed to preserving the dignity of black men in a world which constantly stereotypes them as violent savages, I view this writing as yet one more opportunity to fight the man on behalf of my brothers. That night, before I could finish the piece, I was held on a rooftop in Haiti and raped repeatedly by one of the very men who I had spent the bulk of my life advocating for. Truly, I have witnessed as a journalist and human rights advocate the many injustices inflicted upon black men in the world. The pain, trauma, and rage born of exploitation are terrors that I have grappled with every day of my life. They make one want to strike back, to fight rabidly for what is left of their personal dignity in the wake of such things. Black men have every right to the anger they feel in response to their position in the global hierarchy, but their anger is misdirected. Women are not the source of their oppression. Oppressive policies and the as yet unaddressed white patriarchy, which still dominates the global stage, are. Because women, and particularly women of color, are forced to bear the brunt of the black male response to the black male plight, the international community and those nations who have benefited from the oppression of colonized peoples have a responsibility to provide women with the protection they need. I went to Haiti after the earthquake to empower Haitians to self-sufficiency. I went to remind them of the many great contributions that Afro-descendants have made to this world and of their amazing resilience and strength as a people. Not once did I envision myself becoming a receptacle for a black man's rage at the white world, but that's what I became. While I take issue with my brother's behavior, I'm grateful for the experience. It woke me up, made me understand on a deeper level the terror that my sisters deal with daily. This in hand, I feel comfortable in speaking for Haitian women and for myself and saying that we will not be your pawns, racially, politically, economically, or otherwise. We are women, not weapons of war. Thankfully, there are organizations in Haiti who continue to fight for women's human rights. So it's important not just because it's such an insight, but also because it's 15 years old. Right. When did this happen? Where do these people come from? How could people think like that? What's how has Naperville become what it's become? And Wheaton and Glen Ellen, Downers Grove. What happened? This happened. This woman happened. I take issue with being raped, but I'm grateful for the experience. This is what you're dealing with. This is what you're dealing with. And it's completely invented by honkies and race hustlers, guilty honkies and race hustlers. And they sort of feed off one another to the detriment of those they present as representing, of course. Mm-hmm. And I'll tell you what, the good news is that at least in this country, and I mean in other countries that don't have the luxury of these absurd but very fashionable views that you hear espoused in the Starbucks in downtown Hinsdale, they're not susceptible. It's like, go to Matt Walsh's film What Is a Woman, where he talks about men becoming women and saying they're women, and it goes to Africa and speaks to this tribe about what's happening in this country, and they just laugh like he's telling a funny story that he made up. If only. But fortunately, here, there are some black men, at least, that are starting to recoil at their self-appointed representatives. You know, the honkies in media, and even the race hustlers that come out of black churches and elsewhere, and certainly political offices. Interesting piece that BET did, Black Entertainment Television, not exactly a
right-leaning place.
Right, not an outlet for, conservative orthodoxy, I wouldn't say. But they did this piece, I think, because they're trying to sound an alarm for Biden Incorporated and for the larger Democrat Socialist Party, trying to sound an alarm. And the reason I say that, not just because of what you're about to hear, but because of what they presented as part of the piece in interviewing black residents of Georgia, swing state. What they presented, what they included in the package, was the current polling numbers in swing states like Georgia and Trump in the lead. They're trying to send a message to the party they represent, BET, like the rest of the D.C. press corps, which are the Democrat Socialists, of course. But it doesn't make what a couple of the individuals that were interviewed, doesn't make what they had to say any less salient and interesting. Well, let's hear from them. One is Johnny Daniel. He is a barber. Mm-hmm. I think the barbershop is called Supremes, and it's in the middle of Henry County, Georgia. Black gentleman Johnny Daniel has this to say about how he's thinking about this election, the presidential.
Why did you vote for President Biden in the last
election? Of who he ran with, and he was in the White House for the 8 previous years. I felt like he had the experience, but definitively right now, I couldn't tell you that if they open the polls tomorrow, I'm voting for Joe Biden.
So what changed?
Life, the inflation, and the things that we're going through right now. I want the right person so that I'm not paying $8 for eggs, $15 for gas.
Even though things may be improving economically, but you feel there's a disconnect.
Yeah, there is a disconnect. But the way these last 3 or 4 years have been, this is the worst it's ever been in my life. I never would have even considered thinking about voting for Donald Trump.
But he is now. Azad and Alexandria, they're a couple. Azad had a conversion moment earlier than Alexandria did. Azad is Republican. He's part of the Black Republican group where they live in Georgia. Alexandria is a Democrat. But they both moved over the last couple of cycles. Take a listen to this exchange.
So in 2008 and 2012, you voted for
Barack Obama.
Barack Obama. 2016.
I voted for Donald Trump.
Hillary Clinton. 2020.
Donald Trump.
Biden. And who will you vote for in 2024?
Donald Trump.
Donald Trump. You may vote for the former president.
I may.
Why do you say that?
My views on certain things have changed. I am very much so riding the fence.
What are you struggling with?
Being in a pattern of doing the same thing that I've been doing, because it's kind of like second nature. Like when you go in a poll, you hit Democrat. Something has to happen. I mean, it's just so expensive to survive. And we're planning on having kids. I don't want to live in a stressful environment trying to rub two pennies together to try to make it either.
When did you make that decision to check a different box?
Donald Trump's first term. I'm saying first term because I'm pretty sure he'll be in there for a second term here soon. But in either case, post-Obama, I decided that the party just wasn't suitable to the goals that
I had. How did you come to that conclusion? Because at the end of the day, former President Obama was the first African-American president in history.
That's just
true.
I
mean, as a black man, I would assume that meant something.
Absolutely. You know, I attended the inauguration on his first term. I grew up outside of Washington, D.C. in the 80s and 90s, came through the system as an institutional Democrat, went through a lot of the experiences that young black men go through, good and bad. Ended up leaving that environment, grew up, started looking at the world through a new lens.
312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line, 64636-DA, turnkey.pro text line. It's just anecdotal, but it's interesting. And actually, it's reflected in some of the recent polling where Trump is north of 20% of the black vote after getting 8% in 2020. So that's not an inconsequential tick up. And there's also polling out that is showing generational closing when it comes to black and Latino voters, that, you know, civil rights era blacks have a very different attitude about the Democrat Socialist Party than younger blacks do. And so you're starting to see that divide in terms of sort of knee jerk affiliation close. I mean, it's still a significant advantage for Democrats, of course, and a slight advantage among Latinos for Democrats, but it's closing. And when you start to lose a core constituency, you better figure out how to make the math work. And Donald Trump with 23% of the black vote, that math doesn't work for the left. That math doesn't work for Biden. Al in Rosemont, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Thank you for taking my call, Dan and Amy. Real brief, I just wanted to say about Haiti. Haiti is a sick country over there, and the community over here is sick as well. Mm-hmm. The same as the Nigerians and the Somalians in Minnesota, and I've been around them before. My question to you is, and I think that last when you was interviewing, listened to the interview, how do you grow the middle class out without making the poor middle class and the middle class poor? I don't understand how this works. Maybe I'm reading into it wrong.
Well, I mean, you mean in terms of what Biden is proposing, his whole, like, you know, the middle out instead of the top down, that whole rap?
Exactly.
Yeah. Well, you can't do it. Thanks for the call, Al. Even he runs around calling himself a capitalist in every State of the Union speech, as we played yesterday. But he wants to do that through redistribution. Well, you can't do that. You can't accomplish it. You grow the pie. You don't just redistribute the pieces. That's how you expand the middle. That's how we've always expanded the middle. You don't do it through central planning and commissars taking from one to give to the other. That's anti-growth. That's shrinking the pie, ultimately. Ron, Southside.
Dan and Amy. Dan, thanks for playing that excerpt. Makes me feel very good this morning. And trust me, I'm hearing that everywhere.
I have relatives in Florida, just different places. So again, just thank you. It's like sweet music to my ears this morning that black folks are waking up to this Democrat nonsense. Have a good day.
Thanks for the call, Ron. It is encouraging. A very interesting piece that BET did talk, and they talked to some college students, a historically black college too, that were sort of three black college students, and they were sort of distributed to like lean right, left, and then somewhere in the middle. And it's just interesting what they say, how they're thinking about it and rethinking what they've been told. That's the encouraging part, is you're getting people actually, like you heard from Azad, you know, after two terms of Obama, I started to think. You heard from his girlfriend after the last, four cycles since she voted for Obama twice. And now I'm starting to say, well, wait a second, I want to have a family. I'm seeing the world this way. Does affiliating with these policies and that party make sense? And she's leaning Trump, as you heard. Greg LaGrange.
Hey, how you doing, guys? Good. I'll tell you why people are voting the other way, or blacks and Hispanics are. And I hate to talk in those terms, because we're all the same under the same tent when we have ideology that is similar. It's because they don't like seeing their children butchered by some twisted sexual ideology where they can go out and declare themselves to be whatever they want, or self-administer the, go behind their parents' back and do it. They can pay for groceries if they want to pay for a family instead of the inflation. They can make sure that their streets are safe because they know one party believes in law and order and the other doesn't. That's a big deal. That's a real big deal. And I think this is what the Democrats have completely gone off the rails in every shape, manner, and form. And they're a disturbing block, because when you see what they're doing to families, to country, to our country's national defense, our school systems, our children, how they don't pursue the truth in terms of COVID, how they approach illegal immigration, it's a no-brainer.
Thanks for the call, Greg. Jim, Bluffton, South Carolina.
Hey, good morning, Dan and Amy.
That's very nice.
I live in Scottsdale, but I'm in Bluffton this week working on my golf game, but I listen to the show no matter where I'm at.
Are you at Berkeley Hall?
Pardon me?
Where are you at? What course are you playing in Bluffton?
I'm in Belfair.
Oh, okay. Oh, yeah, that's nice. Oh, I got a friend there. Yeah. I haven't played that course.
I wanted to make two. Yeah, it's anyway. Two great courses here. I wanted to make two points. Last week I posted on X, and that was my statement that Dan Proft is the best political analyst in the country. I just want you to know you validate that point every day. Every day you validate my point.
Did you ever know you're my hero?
No, it's nice.
Second thing I wanted
to have, you know, some people appreciate. Finally, somebody appreciates me. God bless it. All right. Sorry, Jim. Go ahead.
Yeah. And the second point I wanted to make was, you know, I sat on the Cook County bench for 18 years.
Wow.
I had a lot of laws that came in front of me that I personally disagreed with. But I took an oath to follow that law, and I followed it. And the state's attorney of Cook County refuses to follow the retail theft statute. And it's maddening to me. And if I refused to follow the laws when I sat on the bench in Cook County, they would have kicked me off. And they should do something, or something should have been done. She should have been impeached, recalled, whatever needs to be done to her or to the state's attorney for not adhering to the law. She took an oath, and she violates it every day when she doesn't follow that oath, follow the law. And I just want to tell you guys, love your show. Thank you very much for taking my call.
Thanks, Jim. Fairways and greens. Play well. Dan and Amy, Chicago's Morning Answer.
Connect with Dan and Amy using the AM560 mobile app. Download it today at 560theanswer.com/mobile. AM560, The Answer.
All right. Thanks to George Hoffman, who's been in the last few days for Justin Kosick. Justin should return tomorrow. And thanks to Quinn McCarthy, yeah, that's his name, for being an executive producer extraordinaire. Dan, are you playing golf today? Because it's warm here. It's going to be 70 degrees and sunny. So
I am playing golf.
All right. Well, good luck with that.
Thank you so much.
All right. So have yourselves a wonderful day. Enjoy the weather.
Thanks for listening to Chicago's Morning Answer podcast, sponsored by Signature Bank. Signature Bank takes pride in helping customers grow their business and provide unmatched banking expertise, custom financial solutions, and the industry's best technology. So whether you're a business looking for a deposit relationship or needs a ready source of financing, Signature Bank is the right bank for you. Call today at 773-467-5600 to hear how Signature Bank can help your business grow and thrive. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.